Just to remind you, we were in the middle of a sentence when we ended class last time. So the sentence was, we seek a homomorphic expansion from the TG algebra KTG to the TG algebra ATG. The reason we were in the middle was that sort of the sentence was to be explained in 2 hours and not just in 1 minute, okay? What we've done was to explain what KTG means, and 50-50, halfway, what ATG mean. I still have to explain what a TG algebra is, what an expansion is, and what's a homomorphic expansion. And even before doing this, let me tell you why bother. So first of all, a homomorphic expansion will be, in particular, a universal finite type invariant. And we've explained why we care about this earlier. Second, well, general optimism. Why not look for a nice finite type invariant, universal finite type invariant? Third, as we shall see, gives rise to what I will call an algebraic knot theory. So it turns out that once you generalize to knotted trivalent graphs, there are certain problems about knot theory that can be stated in terms of the TG algebra operations, and therefore potentially be resolved using such a homomorphic expansion. So we have sort of a non-theoretic reason to care about it. And this is the first reason why I'd like to call the subject algebraic knot theory. The second reason might come later, might come up later. Anyway, because it leads to high algebra. Because it turns out that in order to find such a TG expansion, we need to, it turns out that KTG is finitely generated, and it's enough to define the expansion on the generators, and so that certain relations will be satisfied, and solving these relations is the high algebra part of this class, okay, or of the subject. Anyway, so now let me briefly remind you what these things are. So KTG is really, KTG is not a single thing, if you want. It's a sum over all graphs gamma of a certain kind of the knottings of gamma. So the graphs are trivalent graphs with a little bit of extra information. To knot a trivalent graph means, let me draw an example of a knotted trivalent graph. Well, it's a thing like that. Okay? And let me remind you that our edges are always thick edges, so they're ribbons. Our vertices are vertices in which three ribbons meet in this way. Okay? And we have a bit of further information. So all edges are directed. Okay? All edges and vertices are labeled. Okay? So, what did I do? Labeled. So, if we want to refer to a specific edge, it has a name. We can call it. We can use the name to refer to it, okay? And finally, we had operations on these gadgets, and the operations were, first of all, there were some trivial operations like relabeling or renaming. So, you know, we could declare that the edge labeled 2 is now labeled 5, Okay, that's kind of not interesting. One, we had again, not terribly interesting operation, but still required, and this was reversing orientations. So, you know, if you have an edge, you have the operation of reversing the orientation of that edge. And then came the interesting operations. So first of all, if we had a local picture like this, we could either delete the middle edge or unzip the middle edge. Okay? And the pictures are drawn schematically, but I really mean do it in R3. Okay? And finally, we have the binary operation. And the binary operation, again, was schematically defined by, well, if you have two graphs, two knotted trivalent graphs, you could map them to their connected sum, which is obtained by adding an edge connecting the two. And again, to make the operation well specified, you need to specify which edge. So in fact, it's not a single operation, it's a family of operation. One for each choice of pair of edges. And in fact, you also need to choose the orientation of the new edge and a certain binary information in each vertex for which side of the vertex you connect to. Okay? Anyway, and it was a non-trivial statement that this operation is well defined. Okay? Now, but it is well defined. Okay, so this is KTG, which we discussed last time, and we also started discussing ATG, and ATG was, well, roughly defined as follows. So A of a graph gamma is to K of that graph, like A of a circle is to K of a circle. Okay? Meaning, the process of getting from K of a circle to A of a circle was consider finite type invariant, consider their nth derivatives, which are the weight systems. These weight systems are linear functionals on a certain combinatorially defined space, and they satisfy certain relations. So now repeat the same process for knotted graphs instead of for knotted circles, and see what you get. Okay? So we did it last time, and found that A of gamma is the following thing, or proposed that A of gamma is the following thing. It is, well, it's the vector space. So given a graph gamma, it's the vector space of diagrams whose skeleton is gamma. Okay? And on top of that skeleton, you draw, and as always, I forget bring color chalk. So on top of this, so you know what, let's make the skeleton thick, and then the cords just thin. So here is the skeleton. So on top of the skeleton, you put an ordinary chord diagram, like in the case of ordinary knots. Okay? So a chord diagram is just a bunch of chords connecting the edges. Okay? And then you mod out by the 4T relation, which is exactly as before, and you must mod out by it for the exact, or you could mod out by it for the exact same reason as before. And also, you mod out by the vertex invariance relation, which comes from the fact that, the vertex invariance relation comes from the fact that if you have a lasso under a vertex, then topologically this is equal to having the lasso on top of the vertex. Okay? But the relation as a relation on core diagrams is the relation that if you have three edges emanating from a single vertex, so these are thick edges, these are edges of the skeleton of the core diagram, okay? Then the sum of the three ways of connecting a chord, which starts somewhere else, near this vertex, so if you take this sum, then this sum is equal to zero. Okay? Are you okay? Are you with me? Okay. Now, I should add that, so this is the case where the three edges are all oriented the same way, are all coming out of the vertex. In general, where is this relation coming from? It's coming from, going from here to here, you go by flipping three crossings, and if all the edges have the same orientation, then when you flip these three crossings, you always go from an overcrossing to an undercrossing, or maybe from an undercrossing to an overcrossing, but in any case, you go in the same direction, so the contribution is always with the same sign. Okay, when you replace over minus under by a double point, it's always plus a double point. Or if you replace an under minus over by a double point, it will always be a minus a double point. But it's always the same sign. However, in general, if the three edges are not oriented the same way, then the vertex invariance relation will say that the sum with signs is equal to zero, where the sign is dependent on the orientation. So basically, if it's oriented out, you'll take it with plus. If it's oriented in, you'll take it with minus. Okay? So again, there is more than just this vertex, this VI relation. Okay. Anyway, so this is the half that we already done. Okay, this is the discussion of this is the half that we took from this statement. But I'd like to assert that there is also an analog of these operations defined on ATG. Okay? So let's see. So ATG has the same operations. So let's see. First of all, relabeling is too trivial to even mention. Well, I mean, in fact, I didn't even mention it here, but all the edges must be labeled as in the graph gamma, and all the vertices have to be labeled. And of course, you can change the labels, and it's a well-defined operation. The relations didn't even notice that there were labels. Okay? So there is relabeling. There is reversing orientation. And reversing orientations is actually a little less trivial than you think. Okay? So let's talk about it for a minute. So, if you have an a core diagram. Okay, here are three pieces of a graph. Okay, so these are three pieces of some bigger skeleton. Okay, and here is a core diagram on this piece of the picture. Of course, you can declare that you reverse the orientation of strand number two. I don't know, what should we call reversing the orientation? S2, okay? So S2 will be reversed orientation of strand number two. So if you reverse it, it becomes this picture. Okay? Except if you do this, the vertex invariance relation is not mapped to a vertex invariance relation. A vertex invariance relation is not mapped to a vertex invariance relation. Okay? Because right, if you now connect all three edges and assume they're also connected over here, and you had a vertex relation, a vertex invariance relation over here, which would be the sum of all three, then its image over here is not a vertex relation, because the vertex relation, as I declared it, would have this minus this plus that. Okay? So, just naively switching the orientation of the edge will not preserve the vertex invariance relation. So we have to be a little more careful. And what we want to do is to the real S of an edge E, so the real orientation switch for an edge E will be reverse orientation and multiply by minus one to the number of chords that end on E. Okay? So this will mean that if you reverse, okay, this means that first of all you'll get a minus sign for this edge, sorry, for this well, you'll get the minus signs that you wanted over here, but also it doesn't spoil the 4T relation, because the 4T relation has because the 4T relation, well, it is sensitive to orientation reversal in exactly the same way, or more precisely, well, you know what? I think it's too boring to get into it. But in the 4T relation, right? When you write the 4T relation as a relation, sort of. You know, if you write it around the circle, then you're assuming that everything is oriented the same way. But if you write the 4T relation as a relation between core diagrams that have their ends on three different skeleton pieces, you find that it is invariant under this operation. So I'm maybe I'll without too much detail. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is the exponent the number of chords or the number of chords minus one?
Neither. It's the number of chord. Sorry, it's not chord. Not chords. It's the number of chord ends.
But it's that number of chords, not minus one.
No, not minus one.
Okay, I'm just asking because if your example was not. You didn't literally mean that you get a minus for your example.
Well, in my example, this term, okay, would have an extra chord in it.
Oh, so including that one.
Well, including all chords that end on that skeleton piece. Okay? So the difference between chords and chord ends is, right, if you have a chord going from that edge to itself, there is actually no cost for changing its orientation because there are two chord ends on it.
I mean, this is because if you have a crossing, if you change one of the strand's orientation, the plus changes the minus, right?
Yes.
Okay.
However, if you change both orientations
change.
And you started from a positive crossing, it remains a positive crossing. Okay. So I should also tell you what are the other operations. So, So the delete operate. You know what? Let me postpone these two operations until after I tell you a little story. Okay? So, a little story. If you remember, I mentioned that KTG is actually less exciting than it seems because you can always choose a maximal tree in your knotted graph and contract it until it looks like a small disk, and then the only knotting that remains is in the complementary to that tree. So it's only a knotting of finitely many edges. So I claim that the same thing happens in A of gamma. Okay? So claim if n is equal to beta 1 of gamma, so beta 1 of gamma is the rank of the first homology of the graph gamma. Okay? Or if you want, let's just say differently, it's just sort of the number of loops in gamma. So this is a little bit informal, but what I mean by that is that, well, okay, if you have a theta graph, it's a two-loop graph. Okay, there is a loop here and a loop here. If you have a, so this is two loops. If you have a tetrahedron, well, a tetrahedron is a three-loop graph, okay, because you have a loop here, a loop here, so three loops, okay? And in general, it's equal to, what is it? It's equal to the number of edges in the graph minus the number of vertices in the graph, plus or minus, so plus the number of connected components. I never said that the graphs have to be connected, so there might be more than one connected components. So this is Euler's theorem, that it's equal to the number of edges minus the number of vertices plus the number of connected components. So in this case, this is three edges minus two vertices plus one connected component, that's two. And in this case, it's six edges minus four vertices plus one connected component, it's three. Okay? Well, I haven't yet stated the claim. The claim is that if n is this, then A of the graph gamma is just isomorphic to A of the obvious thing, the skeleton where you have n lines which are disconnected. And I'm not sure if I think I did formally define this at some point, so use the same formal definition. Okay? And you know, it reminds me of my other class. My other class is about, I teach linear algebra in the afternoons, every Tuesday and Thursday, and one of the theorems that I've stated over there is that if the dimension of a vector space is equal to n, then V is isomorphic to your ground field raised to the power n. Okay? So it's a useful fact to know, but it doesn't tell the whole story because there is no canonical isomorphism. And there is a lot to say about the change of basis, about what happens when you change the isomorphism. Okay? So likewise here, there is an isomorphism, but the isomorphism is not canonical, and changing the isomorphism could be tricky. Okay? But anyway, let me prove the claim nevertheless. Okay? So, here is the skeleton of your graph. Again, I will choose a maximal tree in that skeleton. So what would be a maximal tree? I don't know, let's say, let's choose okay, this edge, and now I'm done. I cannot do anything more. Okay? After I've chosen the maximal tree, I will choose an ordering of the remaining edges, and then at that point, the isomorphism is fixed. Okay, at that point, the isomorphism is, if you have n, if you have a core diagram on n vertical strands labeled 1, 2, 3, and so on, you just take this core diagram and plant it here on these edges. Okay? So is it clear? Is the isomorphism clear? So I've just told you how to go from here to here given further choices. So given a numbering of edges that are in the complement of a maximal tree. You just take a diagram and plant it here. So say if the diagram here was this, then you'd plant it here, it would be, well, you're going from 1 to 2, and from 2, but below the point where you ended before, to here. Okay? Now, I have to show, okay, sorry. The fact that this map is well-defined is obvious, because it's obvious that 40 relations go to 40 relations. Okay? And that's the only thing I need to check. Now I have to show that there is a reverse map, okay? The reverse map will be, okay, what's the obstruction? What's the problem? Well, if my core diagram on gamma was already localized so that all chords end on 1, 2, and 3, I just map it backwards and I have no problem. Okay? But the problem is that I may have chords that end on the forbidden parts of gamma, on the tree. Okay? So let's call this reverse map, what should we call it? I don't know what. Alpha, okay. So alpha will be the tree map. Okay? And the way it works is here is the tree. Okay? You pick some point on the tree and call it, I don't know what, the base. Okay? And then whenever you have you look at a chord which ends on the tree, but so that no chords end between its end and the leaves of the tree. Okay, so basically you may have several chords ending on the tree. You look for one which is closest to the leaves. Okay? So, in the picture drawn, this one is not closest to a leaf, but this one is, and so is this one, because there is nothing between this chord and the leaves. And then you just push that chord out, push one of these chords that are on the tree out using vertex invariance relation. So the vertex invariance relation says that if you have a chord ending here, then you can replace it by a sum, possibly with signs, of ending it here or ending it here. And then you can push it further. And then you can basically push it, you know, if the tree continues to branch, you still have to push each of the branches further out, but eventually you push the cord out from the from the tree to the complement of the tree. And that's what you wanted to do. Okay? Now, I still have to show that this procedure is well defined. Okay? So, as stated, it is clear that, well, again, so I repeatedly push the furthest chord off the tree until the tree is clean. And, well, I didn't say it, but it was implicit from the way I drew the pictures, that if you're below the base, you push out in this direction, and if you're above the base, you push in the other direction. Okay? So it's clear that it's well defined, perhaps except for what happens if you have a chord that ended below the base and you move it to end above the base. As chord diagrams in A of gamma, it's the same. In A of gamma, the base is not even marked. I only marked it for my convenience so that I know in which direction to clean. Okay? So I still have to show you what happens if instead of pushing down a chord, you push it up. Okay? But it's quite clear that the difference between pushing down and pushing up is the sum of all ways of ending this chord on any of the leaves of the tree. Okay? Which translates in here to, you have a picture like this. You have, well, some chords have already been placed on it. And then you have one further chord, and you sum over all possible ways of ending it on all, well, on all ends of these lines, because these ends of these lines are exactly the leaves of the tree. So you sum over all ways of ending it here, 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 or here, here, and here. And this sum is equal to 0 mod 4t for the usual reason, okay? For the usual hook argument, okay? So therefore, therefore the map is well defined, and well, or rather, it's independent of the choice of the base point. And then you still have to show that it maps 4t's to 4t's and vertex invariances to vertex invariants, but both of these are obvious. Okay?
But there's no more vertex invariants in the strand.
No, in the target there is no. Right. No, so vertex invariants gets mapped to 0. Yeah. Because in fact, I've used vertex invariants. So in fact, right, if you had a vertex invariance relation, by definition, this chord gets mapped to the sum of these two with the opposite sign or with the correct sign, so therefore the whole vertex invariance relation gets mapped to 0. Okay? So again, a vertex invariance relation will involve three chord diagrams. So a chord ending here, a chord ending here, and a chord ending here. And by definition, a chord ending here will get mapped to the sum of these two with opposite signs, so it cancels. Okay, so you know, and if we're at it, here is another aside, not quite necessary even for for the next steps that I really need to do. So here is another aside. Claim A of gamma, well, again, it's the analog of the situation for A of a circle. So for A of a circle, we first defined it using chords. And then we said that we can define it also using trivalent graphs. Okay? So we can make the same definition for a skeleton gamma, and the isomorphism still holds. Okay? So what is AT of gamma? So the claim is that these two are isomorphic, where AT of gamma is by definition, well, again, you take linear combinations of chord diagrams with skeleton gamma, but now I also allow trivalent vertices of chords, not just of skeleton. And you mod out by, instead of just by 4T, you mod out by STU, antisymmetry, IHX, well, vertex invariants as remains, okay? And the proof is the exact same proof as before. So really there is no need to show it. Okay. Okay. Having said all of this, I can now tell you what 2 is. Okay? But I can tell you, how am I doing on time? Is it? Oh my God, it's taking much longer than I expected. So I can now tell you what 2 is with sort of slightly cheating, okay? So D and E, so delete and edge and, sorry, not E, and U, unzip. So delete an edge and unzip an edge are defined on ATG as the pictures indicate if there are no chords. If there are no chords. Okay? So, in other words, if you have a chord diagram in which there are no chords on the edge which is to be deleted or to be unzipped, you just delete it or unzip it without doing anything else to the chord diagram. So if there are, you know, okay, sorry, so all of these are skeleton pieces, so I should be making them out of thick lines. So in other words, if you do have chords beginning and ending elsewhere, you just copy them. But otherwise, you don't do anything. Okay? So let's see what it means in practical terms. So, okay, it's time to make more room. So, in practice, suppose you did have a number of suppose you did have a number of chords ending on that special edge, the E that we want to delete or unzip, and suppose this number was K. Okay. If the operation you apply is the delete operation, well, I just told you what to do if k was equal to 0. If k is not equal to 0, well, you could still clean, well, you could declare that this edge is a part of the tree, okay? Or you can basically clean this edge, so you can push all the chords out, then delete this edge, and then see what happens. Okay? But if you push all of these chords out, the last one to be pushed, okay, the last one to be pushed, well, you know what? In fact, let's do it in 2 steps. So first of all, let's push all of them out. If I push to the left, it means that each one gets replaced by the sum of the 2 ways of ending it, either on the top branch or on the or on the bottom branch, right? And then, so this is the first step, and then you delete or unzip. So if you delete this edge, you get a picture like this, in which the chords that used to end, well, in which you have this summation, okay? But these two terms cancel each other because, well, how should I say that? In order to be allowed to do a delete, the orientations would have had to be like this, so that the orientation, so the orientations would have to be consistent. So the orientations after you delete are, so the orientation after you delete is well defined. And then this means that when you use the vertex invariance relation to push out, the term with the chord ending, with the chords ending at the bottom, come, say, with all plus signs, whereas the terms with the chords ending at the top all come with minus signs, because from the perspective of the vertex, these two edges are oriented, one is oriented in and one is oriented out. Okay? So here you have this chord ending either here or here with opposite signs, but once you've deleted this edge, it's the same. So the two terms cancel, so this is equal to zero. So this is really equal to this times delta K0. Okay? So if there were no chords ending on this edge to start with, if K was zero, then the diagram survives. And if there were more than one, if there was one or more chords ending here, then after unzip the diagram, after delete, the whole thing becomes zero. Okay. So this is the delete edge operation. And as for the unzip edge operation, so the skeleton after unzip will be this, okay, and well, I have these chords ending here, well, they end here, but I can push them back to the middle of the picture because there are no vertices, there is nothing to stop it. So I get things like this, okay, and this really means that I have that each, or and a different way of saying it is to say that for each chord end that appeared on E, I now get two possibilities for ending it either on the left branch of the unzip or on the right branch of the unzip. Okay? So this just means that this becomes a sum of a sum of 2 to the k terms. Are you with me? It's time to end. But, well, we're finally done with this. And I still owe you all the rest. Okay, so see you on Thursday.